that you can go through this whole life and never know, never experience the goodness of God and never know what it means to live for Christ. You can seriously live this whole thing out and miss everything. It's like sitting in a movie theater and falling asleep during the previews and waking up as the credits roll. You can do that. It's very possible. Men and women. I'm not talking about just women. Everyone can do this. And I think it's quite awesome. Vance. We love Vance. Good morning, Vance. How's it doing, buddy? He's like, how many times am I going to tell you, Mom? That guy talks too loud. Earmuffs, Mom. Earmuffs. But I think it's important that we recognize that you can seriously go through this whole life and miss everything. And I think that's the saddest commentary that anybody can have. Oh, he was a good guy. I mean, come on, man. If this thing is really true, right? If God is real and this Bible is true, shouldn't it be changing the way we do life? And it's not like he's a bad God. See, this is the cool thing. It's not like he's just a dorky, bad, mean God who hates us. He's a loving God. He's a forgiving God. He's a merciful God. I don't know anybody like God. I don't know any. And I know some of you are like, I'm your friend. I'm sorry, you ain't that merciful. You just ain't. And if you're my friend, you know that. I'm not that merciful. I'm not that forgiving. I'm not that loving. I'm not. But God is. I'm in this weird place this morning where I'm in the middle of frustration, excitement, and anger. It's okay. You can leave right now. It's fine. It's quite all right. I'm good. I don't have a concealed carry. I'm good. If anybody, you know, I'm good. But have you ever been so excited about something and the excitement turns into a little bit of frustration because not everybody is excited about what you're excited about? It's like going ice fishing with somebody who could care less, right? You pull this massive fish out of the ice, you're like, yeah! And like your significant other is reading on a Kindle. Look at this fish! And they're like, oh, that's great. And we're back. Right? Right? Today's gonna be interesting. Welcome. I'm gonna speak out of a book of the Bible that I, be honest with you, just read not so long ago because I looked at this book in the Bible as like the chick flick of books in the Bible. And it's Ruth. If you want to turn to Ruth, you can turn to Ruth. It's right before Judges, right before 1 Samuel, right after Judges. We have Bibles over there. We are a search the index, search the table of contents to find books of the Bible. That's the kind of church we are. So don't feel like if you have to go to the front of your Bible to figure out what page it is. Believe me, I did the same thing because I don't know the Bible song like we're teaching our kids in there. How many of you grew up in church and you know the Bible song? You know the Bible song? You're like, if I raise my hand, he will make me sing it. And you are absolutely right. I will do that. I don't know the Bible song, so I'm always looking at the table of contents. Today we're going to talk about these three aspects of life, loyalty, and love. And I'll be honest with you, ever since last night, I couldn't really go to sleep that well. And I woke up 5:30 this morning, and I was still weird. And I came here, and just, I don't live but like a mile and a half away, not even a mile. And so it's a really short travel here. But it's amazing how the trip from there to here got, it was so much happening in my head and in my heart that when I got here, I was about ready to explode. And I don't know about you, but anybody love MMA fighting? Anybody love MMA fighting? You can raise your hand. It's not a sin. Okay, great. It's not a sin to love MMA. It's just not. It's not. Some of you look at me like, if they beat the crap out of you. Absolutely, they do. It's fantastic. I think any fighting in the context of a sport is awesome. If you don't know what MMA is, Google it. If you don't like violence, maybe don't Google it. But I love watching MMA. I have total respect for two guys who will go into, or two women that will go into a ring, an octagon. Yeah, you ever see? Women do? Thank you very much. Or two women that go into an octagon, they shake hands, and they just beat the tar out of each other. And then one leaves victorious, and the other one leaves on a gurney. And I think that's just awesome. I love football. I'm a big football fan. People say, why do you love football? Thank you so much. I see that hand. Why do you love football so much? I like to hit people. I had a guy call me up. He wants his son to play Hayward football, and I've coached. And he goes, Wade, could you teach him like some offensive plays, some quarterback skills? And I'm like, dude, I know nothing about offense and quarterback skills or plays. I know one thing. This is what I was taught. Raised in the South, playing Southern football as a middle linebacker. Bishop, hit guy with ball. That's it. That's all I knew. Hit guy with ball. That was it. So, and I loved it. I loved it. I figured out when I came up here and started coaching and got around people that, you know, cared a little bit more about health, that I played a lot of my life with a concussion. I had no idea what a concussion was. So I came up here and talked to Laura Seiverling, who's the trainer. I'm like, what's wrong with all these kids getting concussed? This is a ridiculous thing. What does it even feel like to get a concussion? She started explaining it. I'm like, oh, I think I have one right now, you know. We had smelling salts on the sideline. That's how we dealt with concussions. It was like I came off and I was like, hey, coach. And he's like, sit down. Snap. All right, I'm ready. Put me in, you know. I love fighting. How many of you ever watched Rocky, the first Rocky? First Rocky. Yep, you just dated yourself. 1980s. The first Rocky. You know what my favorite scene? Rocky and Apollo Creed, right? Was that the first one or the second one? Apollo Creed was the first one. First one was Apollo Creed. Yeah. Oh, the Russian was the second one, right? Right, right. Yeah. All right. Mr. T, nobody cares about Mr. T. But hey, Apollo Creed, right? Apollo Creed, Rocky's sitting there, he's beating him, he's getting his hind end handed to him. He's on the mat, right? And Mickey's on the side, stay down! I can't do his voice, it's like a 90-year-old voice with something. Stay down, stay down! And what does Rocky do, right? He gets back up and just, cuh. I was so jacked this morning, I got on Google and started playing it and... Some pastors come in and they pray. They go, God, speak today. And I watch Rocky highlights. Dun, dun, yeah, right? And I think here's the big idea is I love the aspect of overcoming. I love the idea of overcoming. I love the idea of being a victor. I love the idea of winning. I love the idea of being the underdog. I love the idea of people saying you can't do something and you do it. And that's probably why I struggle with a lot of my insecurities with performance, like, you know, and failure. That's probably why those are some of my idols that I struggle with. And when I read Ruth, I just read Ruth and you know, a while ago, and I remember telling my wife, I made myself read this. I remember the first time I read it, I got to like, you know, the end of the first chapter, and I'm like, oh, this is just the chick flick. This is like The Notebook, or what is it called? Notebook? Is that the chick flick? If you're a guy and you just shook your head, we forgive you. Right? It's like that. And I'll be honest with you, I just closed it. And I remember people saying, oh, but it's a great picture of Jesus. And I'm like, that's awesome, but I just can't read it. It's just too much of a chick flick for me. So I made myself read it, and I really got some really good stuff at it. And one of the things that I see in here is that, well, let's do this real quick. Are you in Ruth, real quick? I'm just gonna read. Actually, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna summarize. Let's summarize just the first five verses here. There's a man named, and if I get names wrong, forgive me. I come from the South, educated in the South, so I'm not really good with English. Some of you who are in my community group understand that. So. But there are a few people involved here. Right at the beginning, there's this woman named Naomi, and Naomi is married to Elimelech. Yeah, I said that 20 times this morning, and I still got it wrong. Elimelech, and they have two kids named Milan and Chilion, and then those two kids marry two daughters from Moab. Everybody say Moab. Two daughters from Moab. They're Moabite women. One of them is Orpah, and the other one is Ruth. All right, Ruth, the name of the book. Okay. What happens is Naomi's husband, Elimelech, right? Did I say that right? Yeah. He dies. Okay? He dies. In between, okay, let's back up. In between that, they're moving from Bethlehem. All right? They're moving from Bethlehem because there's a famine. There's no food. All right? So they move from there, and it says they went into the country of Moab. And it says, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. And two sons, they married. And unfortunately, chapter 5, the sons died. So now Naomi is left with both her daughter-in-laws, and that's it. Let me shape this a little bit in the context of where this is taking place. In this day and age, if you were a widow, that was a dangerous thing for you, because that means you had no security, you had no one to protect you, you had no one to provide for you, and a widow was a very vulnerable person, especially an elderly or older widow was a very vulnerable person. They sometimes get taken advantage of financially, take advantage of physically. It just wasn't safe, if I can use the word. It wasn't safe, all right? And here Naomi is, and she is in a foreign land with two daughter-in-laws who are from Moab, so they're Moabite women, all right? She's from Bethlehem, so she's a God worshiper. Naomi loves God, the creator of heaven and earth. She worships God. These Moabite women, they're from Moab. They worship strange gods, different gods. They're idol worshipers. And there she is, just them. And this is a crazy moment for Naomi. Because not only is she a widow, but Ruth is a widow, and Orpah is a widow. And you have three widow women living together, trying to make it day by day with no help, no husbands. On top of that, now you have Naomi's deceased husband, who his lineage, his namesake, is now ended. It's almost like having absolutely nothing. You have no namesake, you have no sons, and now you're stuck in life with these two daughters-in-law. We'll find later on that she loved them relentlessly, and I think that speaks a lot about Jesus. You're stuck with these two women who you feel responsible for, but yet they don't even serve your God, and you're in a strange land. They were here for about 10 years. It says in verse 4. And I think this, for me, sums up sometimes how life happens to us. How many have ever been in a dark place in your life? How many have ever been in a lonely place in your life? How many have ever been in that place in your life where you felt like no one knew the pain you were going through? Yeah? Hey, buddy. It's all good. Naomi, Orpah, and Ruth are all three in this place where they have nothing. I think it's great. They smile at me when he does that. I think you guys are smiling at me, right? You're not smiling at him, right? You're smiling at me. John's turning red. Just breathe, brother. Breathe it through. All three of them are left with nothing. And Naomi is in a place where she's older, and I don't want to use these words because some of you might take offense to this, but she just is in that place where she's not thinking about having kids no more, right? She's not in the place where she's looking at starting a family over again, okay? I'm not going to put an age to that. She's looking at a place where she's like, I'm not having kids anymore. And he's saying, Lord, I need you. Lord, I need you. Save me from my mama. All right. And they're all three in this place, and they have this discussion as you travel on through verse 6 all the way down to like verse 14. They have this discussion. I'm just going to summarize this because we're going to go back up to verse 6 is where we're going to start. But they have this whole discussion. Naomi's like, listen, I think you girls need to go back home. I can't take care of you. I'm a widow. You're a widow. I think you just need to go back home and go to your mother's house and find some help. And hopefully the Lord will be kind to you and you'll marry again. And they have this huge discourse that we're not going to get into today. Maybe we will, I don't know. But they have this huge discourse, and long story short, Orpah goes home and Ruth stays with Naomi. But here's the thing I want to get to, is that we all go through If we all go through really crappy times in our life, and what I see over and over and over and over and over again that frustrates me, and maybe this is why I'm a little bit sort of angry, is I see things that defeat people, and those things that defeat people are defeatable. Does that make sense? Let me use it like this. I've struggled in my own life with issues. I've struggled in my own life with insecurities. I've struggled in my own life with addiction. I've struggled in my own life with things that I'm not happy about. But everything that I struggled with, everything that kept me in that dark space, was something that I could overcome. The problem was is that I would allow that thing to beat me. I would allow that thing to be the talking voice in my head. I would allow that thing to be the thing that told me I wasn't enough, to tell me that I can't do it, to tell me all these lies, and I would buy into every single one of them. Every single one. And for years of my life, I let things, insecurities, addictions, problems, rule my life. Anybody else? Rule my decisions. Rule my, the way I saw people. I would let hate, unforgiveness, bitterness, I would let those things paint my vision, almost like when you have a stage light and you can change the colors by putting those films in. I would let that film my vision of certain people in my life. And I'm going to be honest, I still struggle with that. Sometimes I get hurt by people. I know, I'm probably the only one in here. Sometimes I get hurt by people. Sometimes my feelings get hurt. And I hate saying that, but that's what it is. Right? And I get hurt, and sometimes what I want to do, most of the times what I want to do isn't what God wants me to do. Because, and what I do is I let those things defeat me. And what frustrates me in life is that frustrates me myself, that I can look back and I can go, give me a flipping break. How many more days and hours and months and years am I going to allow this thing to rob me of God's goodness, to rob me of times with laughter with my wife, to rob me with precious times with my kids, to rob me from precious times with my friends? How many days will I wake up and allow this one thing or this four things to rob me of the goodness of God in my life? Whether it's an attitude, whether it's an addiction, I don't care what it is. How many more days will I willingly get up and unwrap this pile and coat myself in it willingly and allow it to frustrate me? How many days will I do that? And then I read Ruth, the chick flick of books in the Bible. And I'm not trying to be offensive. I'm just saying, it's got a girl's name to it. You know? Again, I'm a fighter. Like, give me Samuel. Give me Kings. Give me David. You know what I'm saying? Give me those things. And I read Ruth, and here she is. Her husband is dead. On top of that, her sons are dead. She's in a foreign land for 10 years, living in a place where they don't even worship the God that she worships. And now she's left with nothing. Nothing. She has two Moabite daughter-in-laws that are looking to her for help. And she is probably in the most darkest place in her life. And I ask myself, what do you do when you get into that place? Look with me. Verse 6. Three words. Then she arose. Then she arose. She's in the most pitiful place of her life, and I don't mean that as disrespectful. I'm saying she's in the lowest place. She is a widow. She has no sons to take care of her. She's away from her family. She's lost her namesake. She is without everything. She's not fighting an addiction. She's fighting darkness and sorrow and loneliness. She's fighting an uncertain future. And these three words show up. And then she arose. And everything changes from that point. The story isn't the same from that point on. And I'm here to tell you right now, I think this is the place that we have to begin our lives. And maybe you're here today, and maybe you're in that dark place, and maybe you're here and you don't feel like you have what it takes because you've struggled with too much, and even today you've struggled with too much. And maybe you feel lonely, and maybe you feel down, and maybe you're still dealing with pornography, maybe you're still dealing with alcohol, maybe you're still dealing with drugs, maybe you're still dealing with adultery, maybe you're still dealing with whatever. Maybe that's still your story, but I'm here to tell you right now, everything can change if you will do this one thing that Ruth did, and if you can get up. Rocky, right? He's getting his butt handed to him by Apollo Creed. And he's in that moment where he can't even crawl. And he puts his glove up on the first rope on the ring. And he braces himself. And there's Mickey, right? His trainer, his best friend, a father figure to him. And he's not telling him to get up. What is he doing? He's protecting him. And he's saying, stay down, stay down. You will die if you get up. You will die if you get up. Stay down, Rocky. It's not safe for you, Rocky. And what does he do? And I will tell you, there will be people in your life that will tell you it would not be safe for you to get up. It is way safer for you to stay down. Those things that you're addicted to, those things that you're struggling with, they will speak to you and they will say, it's not safe for you to get up. You should stay down. You should hide. What will people say if you get up and you get knocked back down? What will people say when they find out what's been keeping you down all these years? What will they think of you? And I will tell you this, Jesus is not safe. We have to get to the place in our lives where we risk everything and we say, come hell or high water, I will not stay down in this, but I will rise. And though they knock me down 10,000 times, I will continue to get up until I stand victorious. And this isn't a self-help thing, because you can't do this apart from Christ. Because apart from Christ, you will stay down no matter how hard you try to get up. You will always be down. I'm getting tired of this adage that's going on. I'm getting tired of things I hear. And I'm mainly speaking to men. I get tired of things I hear about men. Oh, just need a good man. I'm like, man, there's freaking tons of good men around here in this very room. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this stuff. I don't know about you, but golly, man, I don't want to stay down. Ruth is at the most pivotal point of her whole life, and if she stays in Moab, if she resolves her life to this place, nothing happens. The book isn't written. We never know. And she disappears. She disappears. I think we got to get to the place where we're willing to risk everything. I've been told, Wade, what you're asking is really hard. Yep. So is long division. See, the truth is I can sit here and paint you a beautiful picture and tell you how easy it's going to be. But that is an idiotic lie. It is hard. It will require everything of you. See, we want to paint Jesus as this person who, oh, he would never do that. He loves too much. That's why I love what Joe talked about sin and about how God will have his day where he will destroy sin. Because, like Joe said, he is a God of justice. Justice. You want to be a man? Be a man of justice. How many of you are wishing you'd left when I gave you permission? Now you just look like a chicken if you leave. Turn to me with Psalms. This isn't even, I'm telling you, all this is fresh, so congratulations. Psalms. If you're in Ruth, just go right. Just go right, and you'll hit Psalms. 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st, 2nd Kings, Chronicles are in there, and then you'll get close. Nehemiah, Esther, another chick flick. Job. Esther's a good one too, though. And then you'll hit Psalms. I want you to go to Psalm 107. I read this today by mistake. By mistake. Psalm 107. Naomi arose. She got up. How many of you right now, don't raise your hands, but some of you right now, you're in that place and you feel like or you think that that's where you have to stay. Oh, but wait, but you don't know how long I've been struggling with that. You're right. I don't have to know. But wait, I don't think I can do it. You know what? You can't apart from Christ. Ugh. Wasn't even going to go here. Psalm 107. I want you to listen to this. Read along if you can. Some wandered, this is in verse 4, some wandered in desert waste, finding no way to city to dwell in. Hungry and thirsty, their souls fainted within them. What does verse 6 say? Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble. And what happened? He delivered them from their distress. I want you to listen. Verse 7, he led them by the straight way till they reached the city of their... Isn't that awesome? You know what's funny? Just God bless you. It goes on and on and on. Think of verse 10. Some sat in darkness. Sat in darkness. Rested in darkness. Decided to stay in darkness. Some sat in darkness in the shadow of death. Prisoners in affliction and in irons, for they had rebelled against the words of God and spurned the counsel of the Most High. So he bowed their hearts down with hard labor, and they fell down with none to help. And right there we stop. We say, see, I told you, he's a mean God. We never read the next verse. 13. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. And what happened? And he delivered them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness and the shadow of death, burst their bonds apart. Let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love, for his wondrous works, children of man. For he shatters the doors of bronze and cuts into the bars of iron. And then it goes on and on and on. I could read all the way to the 43rd verse. And it is time and time again where people just like us decide to sit in darkness, decide to be bound by things, and we rebel against God. And God in his justice does what he does. But it's amazing how every time they decide to cry out to the Lord. And what happens every time God delivers them? Give me a flipping break. You want to know how good God is? You can deliberately go your own way, and he will have justice. Don't think it'll go right with you, because he is holy. This is what people don't want to say. God would never do that. What kind of God is an unjust God? But let me tell you something. As soon as you cry out, he delivers. I don't see anywhere in the scripture, anywhere where God's going, okay, I'll do that, but promise me you won't do that again. Pinky swear on it. Let's write up a contract. I'm not here to belittle pain. I'm really not, because some of you have faced some really messed up stuff, and some of you are struggling even now with some messed up stuff, and I'm not here to belittle that. I'm just here to tell you that you don't have to sit in darkness. You don't have to stay there. With God, you can do the same thing Naomi did, because she got up. Sometimes the only thing keeping us from rising is fear. I believe some of you in here have phenomenal ideas. I believe some of you in here have phenomenal dreams. I believe some of you in here have a picture of who you want to be, man or woman or teenager or student. You have great aspirations. And the only thing keeping you from taking that one step, the only thing keeping you from rising up is fear. And I'm here to tell you, the more you pay that devil fear, the more he'll take from you. The more you feed into that, the more he'll take from you. Let me tell you something. It took a lot of boldness for Naomi to rise and do what she did. If you read the story, she goes back. She goes back to her hometown. We talk about this in a small town. It's sort of hard to be vulnerable, isn't it? Because everybody knows everybody. Right? It's sort of hard to share your junk. And the first thing we do when we mess up in a small town is we hide. Let's just be real. It's better to be unseen than seen sometimes in a small town. Because we live in a cruel, crappy world. People are real quick to judge and real quick to label you with something and make sure you don't get over it. Oh, but don't you know so-and-so and what he did? Just last week I told somebody, they started going on this, and I said, hey, listen, I ain't having it. I ain't going to talk about that no more. You're going to shut that down right now. It's amazing how holy people get when somebody tells them that. No, I wasn't trying to do that. Mm-hmm, yeah, you were. Yeah, you were, and I'm shutting that crap down right now. Naomi got up and she went back home. Naomi's best bet was to stay where she was. If you think about it, her best bet to save her reputation, she'd gone 10 years, y'all. 10 years. I mean, no offense, but without Facebook, I wouldn't know what somebody looked like if I hadn't seen them for 10 years, right? Some of you find people on Facebook, it's been 10 years, you're like, some of you are like, whoa, some of you are like, hey, you know. Right? She had a perfect opportunity to hide. Perfect opportunity just to make a new life. And maybe she'd find favor with her two daughter-in-law's families. Maybe they would remarry. Maybe their husbands would take care of Naomi. So what if she lives in a foreign land with foreign gods? So what? At least she'd be taken care of. She does the most dangerous thing. She goes back to her small town. A widow. No husband. No sons. She risked it all. Naomi was angry. Have you ever been angry? Been angry with God, wondering why this happened. God, why did this happen? Why did you allow this to happen? Naomi, why? God, why? Why? Why did my husband die? Why did my kids die? Why am I in this place, in this strange land, strange people, worshiping strange gods? Customs that I'm not used to, people that I don't really know. Why? Psalm 23:4 says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. We say that a lot, don't we? Fear no evil. Why? Right? Paraphrase, because your rod and your staff, right? Because God is there. What's keeping you? What's keeping you from not rising? Romans 8:11 says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. It's said like this, the same spirit that raised Christ from the dead lives in us. If you believe, you have that same spirit in you. I've never raised anybody from the dead before. Never been put in that spot. I only know one person that I've ever met that's been raised from the dead, and that's Jesus. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, because it has. But let me tell you something. That has to be a pretty powerful spirit to raise a person from the dead. Wouldn't you agree? Wouldn't you agree? How much power does it take to put life back into a human that is dead? How much power must it take? And we just space out that that same spirit lives in us. And you know what happens? So we stay where we are. And our deceit and our fear and our addiction, and we never get up. Everything changes. Everything changes. You know what? Forget this. Here. Whatever. Let me read this to you. Verse 6. Then she arose with her daughter-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard that in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. The famine's over now. She's going back home. Verse 7. So she set out from that place where she was with her two daughter-in-laws, and they went on their way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, go, return, right? We talked about it. Return to your mother's house, and may the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. Naomi puts herself in the place of the dead. Wow. She says, may God bless you and deal kindly with you because you have persevered through the death of your husbands and with me. Wow. Verse 9, the Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of your husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, and they wept. And they said to her, no, we will return to you, to your people. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in the womb that my daughters... Right? Sons in the wombs that they may become your husbands. I got nothing for you. Turn back. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear a son, would you therefore wait till they're grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? You see what she's trying to do? She's trying to protect, trying to help these women who have lost their husbands, and they want to go with her, but she's like, listen, there's no hope for you with me. There is no life for you with me. There is nothing. I have nothing to offer you. I am too old. I have nothing. I have no future. Only to go back to my people and possibly die. End of verse 13, it says, no, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Ever been mad at God? 14, then they lifted up their voices and wept, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Ruth would not go. I think it's amazing. Naomi, she gets up. In her mind, she goes, I'm going back. I'm going to return. I think this is where we need to find our places. When we raise up, we need to go back. We need to go back to the Lord. We need to go back to hear what he said. We need to go back to the land where there's food. I think so many times we're so captivated and so mesmerized by the pain and the hurt and the darkness that we can't even see the hand in front of our face. And we sit in darkness with no hope. We're obviously not going to finish this today. I told you I was riled up. This is such a good chick flick. But here's where my heart is this morning, is some of you are here in this room right now, and you don't want to be here. And I get it. I was the same way. It's the same way. Went to church, I didn't want to be there. Just went. It's a good thing to do. So I did it. Didn't want to make friends. Just fine with the friends I had. Didn't want to tell people that I needed Jesus. Didn't want to tell people that I was suffering in my sin. Didn't want to tell people that I was suffering in my marriage. Didn't want to tell people that I was suffering in my relationships. Didn't want to tell people I was suffering in my family. Didn't want to tell people that I was suffering. It's not going to go. Not going to share. Just going to sit there and be invisible. And I will tell you, you can do that. Believe it or not, you can do that. You can live your whole life not knowing anybody. You can live your whole life not sharing your hurts and your pains and your sorrow. And you will sit right there. And you will die in that darkness with no help. Or you can arise. Or you can stand. You can stand and you can acknowledge that I need Jesus. I need Jesus in my marriage. I need Jesus in my life. I need Jesus in my workplace. I need Jesus to help me with my addiction. I need Christ to save my soul from eternal damnation. I need Jesus. Randy and Josh bought me a shirt that says, "Y'all need Jesus." And as I got here today, I thought about going home and putting it back on. Because that's the commentary for all of us. Stand with me, please. Brooke, if you don't mind. I'm going to say this, and then we're going to pray. And I'm sorry, if it sounded scattered and bizarre, it was. But I think this is an important thing, because here's the deal. You can arise because Christ is risen. If Christ isn't alive, then we can't arise. If Christ isn't victorious, then we can't be victorious. You see it? If Christ isn't loving, then we can't be loving. If Christ can't forgive, then we can't forgive. But the truth of the matter is this, is that Christ is alive and he rose from the dead and he stands victorious right now. And the good news behind that is that whatever you are in, whatever you are struggling with, whatever you are messed up and sitting in darkness over, you can get up out of that today. Today can start your day, but what if I mess up tomorrow? Then we'll start over tomorrow. We live in this jacked up system that says, "Oh yeah, but they failed yesterday, and they said they were going to get better, and they didn't get better. They failed again, so that's not." You know what I call that? Being human. What is the desire of your heart? What is going on in here today? Aren't you tired? Aren't you weary of where you are? Aren't you weary? Aren't you tired of just mulling through this darkness all by yourself? Aren't you just tired of that? Come on, it takes everything out of you, doesn't it? You wake up every day, and some of you in this room are hoping to God some days when you fall asleep that you won't wake up. And I'm here to tell you, your life is way too valuable. And I will not let you walk out those doors until you've heard about a king who loves you relentlessly, doesn't care what you've struggled with, doesn't care what you're struggling with, and all he wants you to do is get up. And you have the opportunity right now to do that. And I am sick and tired. I am sick and tired of playing it safe. Because I'm no different than you are. I'm just as jacked up with just as much issues as you got. Time of playing it safe is over.